It's Tuesday, May the 21st, 2024, and this is Narrative Wars. Coming up in today's show, the quadrennial presidential pandemic is back on schedule, and the CDC, FDC, and the mainstream media, well, they're all fanning America's fears. A South American nation has gone back to 2019 guidelines for gender dysphoria, and the LGBTQ plus community is losing their minds. And also, Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl kicker Harrison Butker is being criticized nationally for both being a Catholic and speaking at a Catholic college commencement. These stories and more on today's edition of Narrative Wars. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons, and you don't want to miss this.
We the people are sick and tired.
Let's peel back the curtain of confusion to shed light upon the mainstream media madness. And now, Narrative Wars with your host, Jeffrey K. Lyons.
And tired, so tired.
Well, Narrative Wars now has a new landing page site, which gives you direct access to all our podcasts and social media content. Just go to jeffreyklyons.com. Just type that into your browser. That's all you need to remember, jeffreyklyons.com. And that's Lyons with a Y. Once you're there, you can choose all your favorite podcast apps, social media apps to follow this program and comment. Now for our first story regarding the quadrennial presidential pandemic, which seems to be back on schedule, according to the fear-promoting CDC, FDC, and mainstream media. Let's take a listen to this piece. It's from CBS News, and this is cut number one. It's 29 seconds.
Officials at the Food and Drug Administration are taking precautions in the case of the current strain of bird flu, just in case it spreads to humans on a large scale here in the U.S. The FDA commissioner testified on Capitol Hill yesterday and claimed that while the threat to humans is low and dairy products are safe, agencies are working to shore up countermeasures. So far, there have been just two documented cases of human infections in the U.S., one from exposure to dairy cows and the other following exposure to poultry.
So, big panic here, big freak out, two cases, one person sick, exposed to being next to a cow, and another person sick, exposed to being next to poultry. You know, it could be a chicken, it could be a turkey. Two people, and they're having a congressional hearing about this. So, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, the organization that told Americans to shelter in place for 2 weeks, which ended up to be over a year for many states, including shutting down public schools. Remember that, FDA? Now they're telling us we must be afraid of the bird flu. A quick check on the internet will show that the bird flu story, well, it's been flying around there for about a year or more. But now that we're only 6 months away from the November election, the FDA is pushing the story that much harder. At this point, there's no evidence that it can be transmitted from animals to humans, but they still want us to be afraid. Again, only two human cases, one from a person who they're saying was exposed to dairy cows. So remember the stories about malaria in the United States, which hit the news cycle way back in June 2023. Well, of course you don't. The mainstream media is no longer pumping that narrative. They're pumping the bird flu narrative, and something which has been pumped and flying around there for over a year, 2 years. It just seems to keep flying around on the mainstream media radar. NBC News, May 1st, 2024. Here's an article. Two possible bird flu vaccines could be available within weeks. So this is really interesting. Nobody has got the bird flu from animals. There's two cases. We don't even know if they really did get it from poultry or a cow, a bovine. But amazingly, they have the vaccine to fix the problem, which doesn't even exist yet. How does that happen? And if you do a little digging, you know it takes 5 to 10 years to come up with vaccines. And you have to test it in phase one and phase two, multiple phases. So when did all that happen? The United States has two vaccines ready to go should the strain of bird flu circulating around in dairy cows start spreading to human beings. So far, there's no evidence. So why is this even a story on May the 1st, 2024, NBC News? There's no evidence. In fact, why do you even develop a vaccine if there's no need? Because there's no evidence for the vaccine. Is it because somebody wants to make money? Another good question. Continuing in the article, the virus has taken off in dairy cows. 36 herds across 9 states. Studies suggest that vaccines will offer good cross-protection against cattle outbreak viruses. That's Dimitri Daskalakis, director, National Center for Immunization, Respiratory Diseases. Maybe he's our new Fauci. Not really sure. But here's the point. How do they know that these vaccines are going to even help to solve a problem that does not even exist? I don't know. But NBC News put this silly story out there May 1st, 2024. Then they kept pumping it. Time Magazine. Another article, May the 9th, 2024, how to stop bird flu from becoming the next pandemic. So nothing's spreading. There's no proof of transmission from animals to humans. And they're using the word pandemic. Now they're calling it H5N1, outbreak in dairy cows, widespread, multiple U.S. cases. Well, cows are sick. Okay. Although only one human infection with the virus has been documented. So apparently they're saying one human has this same virus. May 9th, 2024. Now this is very interesting. In the middle of this article, it says, we find ourselves in a situation reminiscent of the early 2020s when the U.S. stood on the brink of the COVID-19 pandemic and hesitated to take action, restricting testing to only those with epidemiological links to China. So they make the assertion that we're in another early 2020 moment and that we have to do something. Only one guy's sick. Thousands of cows perhaps have been sick and only one human being has been sick. Bird flu has been circulating in dairy cows for at least 4 months. The U.S. government cannot afford to repeat the mistakes made at the onset of COVID-19 pandemic. Well, that's really interesting because in early 2020, Trump was saying we need to restrict people flying into the United States from China. And the Democrats pushed back on that. They said, Trump is crazy. And remember Nancy Pelosi walking around in Chinatown, in San Francisco, in her district? Everything's fine over here. Very strange, the things that happened. But they're trying to say, no, we need to go back. We're in that moment again. We need testing, and more testing. Fact check, could bird flu kill 1 in 4 Americans? Oh, they're really beating the drum of fear now. Newsweek, May 13, 2024. You see how the drum beats continue and get louder and louder? The first article we read was possible bird flu vaccines could be available in weeks. That was May the 1st, 2024. That was NBC News. And then May 9th, 2024, how to stop bird flu. Well, you got to test. And we're at another early 2020 moment. Could have a pandemic. And then May the 13th, Newsweek says, now there's congressional hearings and that maybe, it's all about maybe and conjecture and could it happen? Maybe it'll sometimes jump in other animals, including dairy cows and in some cases humans. The disease could kill 1 in 4 Americans. Well, if you want to grab a headline and you want clickbait, that is the way to do it. And that's the United States Food and Drug Administration chief who's suggesting that. Oh, it's going to kill 1 in 4 Americans. Well, folks, the real story here is that this is a disease that shows up every 4 years. And it shows up right before the presidential election. And here it is, right on schedule, 6 months before the election for the president of the United States. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it? No, maybe it does make a lot of sense. Because somebody wants the American public to panic. They want more of those mail-in ballots because they want to cheat. They want their Democrat cronies to get reelected. Coming up next, a South American nation which has gone back to 2019 guidelines for gender dysphoria and the worldwide reaction to this news. Let's take a listen to this. This is cut number 2. It's from Fox 26 Houston, and it's 37 seconds.
Peru has established a new group of people considered to be mentally ill. Transgender, intersex, and non-binary people are now officially in that category in that country. The president of Peru signed off on the law last week. According to the state's health ministry, the decision was made to guarantee full coverage of medical attention for mental health for the transgender community, which should also note people in LGBTQ plus community as a whole will not be forced to do conversion therapy, meaning make them straight.
Now, I want to make a couple quick comments here, and then after that, I want to bring in my dear wife, who has worked in the field of mental health for many years. But let me make a few quick points here. So, the story said Peru has established a new group of people to be mentally ill. And so, we're going to come back to that, you know, mentally ill. Is that a term which is used in the mental health profession, and is that applicable to what just happened in Peru? So I'm going to ask my wife to weigh in on that. But a couple other points first before we get to that. In the past, we used to call gender dysphoria puberty, and it was awkward. Everybody knows it was awkward, but everybody went through it somehow. In fact, they even prepared us for that awkward point in life in school, and they said, it's coming, puberty's coming, get ready, it's going to be weird. And it came and we survived. Finally, it's important to note that Jordan Peterson mentions that the majority of youth that are currently experiencing gender dysphoria during puberty, there's really no need to give them hormone treatment and radical body altering surgery. Over time, the dysphoria dissipates. So what say you, Elizabeth Lyons? And let me just get a little bit of your background just for the audience so they'll know how long you were a therapist and what types of issues that you dealt with in the past.
Well, I am classified as a licensed marriage and family therapist. And marriage and family therapy is a field which is which requires a terminal master's degree in order to practice. It's related to psychology. We stand on the shoulders of psychology, but we are trained to work with pretty much all ages, individuals, couples, families, groups. We really have a broad-ranging experience as far as treatment, who we treat.
So we kind of want to jump on this Peru story because the average person out there that's listening to our program is not a marriage family therapist. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
And they don't have the kind of experience that you have. Now, you practice for 10 years, 12 years, 14, how many years exactly? Tell the audience.
14 years.
14.
Before I retired recently.
14, that's a nice number. So Peru, this is the lead here in this Fox 26 Houston piece, local Fox station in the city of Houston. May the 15th, 2024, they say that Peru officially categorizes transgender people as mentally ill. Now, do people in your profession, do marriage family therapists categorize anybody that you're treating as being mentally ill?
Well, since you asked me to comment on this issue, I was thinking a lot about the terms that I was taught and the terms that I was cautioned against, us, I guess you could say. And I couldn't actually tell you exactly when this happened, but there was a shift in my profession and actually psychology on the whole, away from language that would pathologize the client or the... And so that meant that a lot of terms became kind of anathema because they were stigmatized. So if you say that someone is mentally ill or that someone has a mental illness, somebody somewhere long before I came into the profession decided that that was pathologizing language. And we were trained to kind of watch our language so that there would not be any stigma to the patient.
So fair enough. So what you're saying is that even when you began and you were practicing for 14 years, that other therapists and those that were training you, they were not using the term mentally ill. That was not something that was a part of the common parlance in the marriage family therapy community. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say. We have been trained for decades to use to say this, not that, you know, to say diagnosable mental disorder or disorder rather than classify or label someone as mentally ill.
Well, it's probably fair to say that the people at Fox 26 Houston were not therapists themselves, the people that wrote this headline. Because if they were, they probably would not have used the term mentally ill, saying that Peru officially categorizes transgender people as mentally ill. So, all right, covering that point, let's move on to the point of something happened. So the World Health Organization came out with this in 2019, and here's an article. It was in Time Magazine. World Health Organization will stop classifying transgender people as having a mental disorder. Now, mental disorder is a little bit different than mentally ill, but the World Health Organization, they use a different set of guidelines. Theirs is called ICD. The guidelines that you use is the DSM. But in both cases, you've got published guidelines that help you to diagnose a mental disorder. I guess that's fair enough to say. Yeah, that's what we would call it. Not mentally ill. Okay, we're not using that language. So they did get that part right in the Time Magazine article in May 28th, 2019. But something shifted in 2019 with the World Health Organization. And according to this article, there was a change and a reclassification that took place. World Health Organization will no longer categorize being transgender as a mental disorder after a major resolution to amend its health guidelines. Now, they can do this. They're not binding in terms of the United States of America. They have their own classifications in this ICD published volume, and the United States uses American Psychological Association, I believe, the DSM. And well, the DSM
stands for Diagnostic Statistical Manual.
Diagnostic Statistical Manual. Fair enough. So what has happened in Peru? Well, it looks like what has happened is that the nation of Peru has rolled back the diagnosis for those that are experiencing gender dysphoria. And they're going back to a definition which was very similar to what World Health Organization was using prior to May of 2019. Peru now has made it illegal to do the gender-affirming care, also known as gender-affirming castration. They're not allowing the medical community to chemically castrate and sterilize people who are diagnosed with gender dysphoria or self-identify as being transgender individuals. They're not allowing the medical community to chop off body parts anymore. And they've gone back to the 2019 definition that we mentioned by the World Health Organization, classifying the transgender community as simply having a mental disorder, needing counseling. Mm-hmm. And this was normative just a few years ago, less than 5 years ago. And now the LGBT community worldwide, well, they're basically losing their minds over this because they want to chemically castrate people, or at least offer that, and chop off body parts. Your thoughts?
In my field, we, I guess you could say, take the same oath or adhere to the same credo that medical professionals do, which is do no harm. And I've wondered why I would choose to not offend someone as opposed to saying to someone, oh yes, go and do all of the medical surgeries and all of the treatments that are required to change
which
your
will
gender.
Actually render that person sterile.
Right. So
for the rest of their life. You can't reverse that.
Right. So to me, the more compassionate way to interact with a person with gender dysphoria, or even just with questioning sexual orientation, or, you know, they have questions like most individuals going through puberty would. We that have gone through puberty know that you it's a crazy time. It's a time of a lot of questions.
Yeah, you've got all those hormones flying around and changes in the body and I don't know, hot flashes, and yeah, it's a crazy time.
So choosing to be compassionate in my language as opposed to being almost brutal in my recommendations to, you know, yeah, do something that cannot be altered, you know, do something that's really going to do harm, as opposed to, well, I'm sorry, I have to offend you a little bit and tell you that you need to go through puberty, you need to hang tough, if you will.
I really appreciate that, and that kind of lines up with what Jordan Peterson is saying. He says the majority of youth that are experiencing gender dysphoria during puberty, they really don't need any drugs or puberty blockers, hormones, any of that, chemical castration. They don't need that. They will eventually go through it and come out okay. And really, that is just a part of life. I wanted to move on to another point. One of the talking points right at the top of the list is, well, if you don't allow these children that identify as being trans, if you don't allow them to go through the chemical castration and the chopping off of body parts and all the things that the modern so-called medical community is recommending, then they're going to commit suicide. And then that really scares parents, because no parent wants to go to bed thinking that, you know, I might cause my child to commit suicide if they don't get this so-called gender-affirming care, which I don't even want to use that term. It's gender-affirming castration. So here's a study that was Sweden. This was 1973 to 2003. And so that's a longitudinal study. It's 30 years. And they tracked 324 people that had reassigned their genders. So this is the longest cohort study, the longest study where they track this a group of people for 30 years of their life. And there's a number of things that we could flush out of this, but I wanted to just, I'm going to put, again, the link in the show notes. But one of the things they keep saying is that, you know, your kid's going to kill himself. Well, this study, again, Sweden, 1973, 2003, the study was called Long-Term Follow-Up of Transsexual Persons Undergoing Sex Reassignment Surgery, Cohort Study in Sweden. So I'll put the links in the show notes. You can check it. But suicide, I want to focus on that. And the study found that when they track the control group, so you want to always compare to a group that has not gone through the variable, which you're testing. And the variable in this case is that these were people that were had sex reassignment. They had that procedure. And so they're comparing those people to people that did not, and a much larger group. And what they found out is that between years 1 and 10, there wasn't much difference at all regarding suicide rates. But once they got to years 10 through 20, they found out that these people that they were tracking that were sex reassigned persons, that's the terminology they used, they found out that they were 27 times more likely to die from suicide compared to the control group. So that's the exact opposite of the talking point that has been driven down the minds of the American public. It's a complete lie. And what we're doing here every week at Narrative Wars is we're flushing out and we're calling it the way it is. In fact, I can see it right there. There it is. Yeah, we're going to have to call that one as a flag on the field. It's a flag on the field, and it's not true. It's not true that if they don't get this gender reassignment surgery, that they're more likely to commit suicide. In fact, it's the opposite. They're 27 more times more likely to die from suicide, and there's no other study out there with this kind of data. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's unconscionable for either a mental or a physical health professional to counsel parents or counsel loved ones of a young person that, if you don't consent to this surgery or this puberty blocker or this type of treatment, that your child will commit suicide. I think it's unconscionable because this longitudinal study is like gold, because this is people essentially on the other side of that threat speaking to parents and mental health professionals and telling them this is not just conjecture, this is what will happen. And so if I was a parent looking ahead at my child's future, I can still affect my child's future by, number one, being there with them, being with them through the puberty experience, not just assuming that they will give in or give up and commit suicide, but the fear tactic of a professional saying to a parent, if you don't do this or consent to this, your child is going to commit suicide. That's unconscionable.
That's unconscionable. Yeah. And, there's this term or phrase in medicine, which is informed consent. Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to give informed consent of risks and possible risks when you go through major surgery or take certain experimental drug treatments. But this information is not being shared with people. And what you're beginning to see is a lot of people, Chloe Cole is a great example. We've talked about her in past shows, but a lot of people are detransitioning. Chloe Cole as a teen had her breasts removed and she was going through a number of procedures regarding the hormone therapy. And she decided, I'm not happy with this. And she went back, she detransitioned back to her birth gender, which was female, and she did not receive informed consent. And I agree with you, that's unconscionable. I want to kind of end this discussion here. Now, England, this is March 19th, 2024. England is now limiting gender transitions for youths. And this article in the Associated Press says that the legislators in the United States are watching this. Now, this is really interesting because England has a national health program called National Health Service of England. And back in March of 2024, just recently, a few months ago, they recently cemented a policy that issued on an interim basis almost a year ago that sets a minimum age at which puberty blockers can be started along with other requirements. So in other words, they're putting some brakes on this thing. They don't want minors to be taking this. You know, maybe they read the study from Sweden. Maybe they're receiving some information which doctors in America should receive. But I look at this as a good thing. And this is one of those stories that's kind of flown under the radar. But I think it goes right hand in hand with what has just happened at Peru. These countries are tapping the brakes and saying, wait, this is harmful to young people. And, you know, if they want to do it as an adult, knock yourself out. But for us to be chemically castrating this generation, young people, this is harmful to our society. Your thoughts?
Well, okay, you used the word harmful. And whenever I am in a therapy session one-on-one with another individual, I'm always thinking of what would be harmful and what would be less harmful and what would not be harmful at all. And I'm always going to go for the choice or the treatment option that that does no harm. So that's my thought as far as what England is doing. I'm looking one-on-one, but of course, if I were a policymaker, I would be looking at large groups of people, perhaps a whole nation, but I would still need to weigh harm versus less harm. And, I would not choose a potentially deleterious, option, a potentially harmful option, if I have any option that is going to be less harmful. It's just common sense.
Well, Elizabeth, we want to say thank you for joining us on this episode of Narrative Wars and weighing in with your expertise as a marriage family therapist. And I hope you'll be open to coming back again when we overlap or can use some of your future expertise on topics that are similar to this.
Well, I'm honored to have been able to give some input, and I hope I will be asked back.
Thank you, and we look forward to that. When we come back after the break, we'll discuss a Super Bowl record holder who was criticized for publicly supporting Judeo-Christian values. Ladies and gentlemen, if you found value in this program, please share it with one or two like-minded friends. The easiest way to do this is to tell them to go to jeffreykline.com for all the links to podcasts and social media. Also, please 5-star rate, and if you can, leave comments. That'll push the program up in the internet search. Jeffrey K. Lyons' Narrative Wars can be found on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about a Super Bowl record holder who was criticized for publicly supporting Judeo-Christian values. Let's take a listen to this piece from E! News. This is cut number 3, and it's 53 seconds.
But I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world.
The NFL is responding to a controversial speech from Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker. The league reacts after comments from the three-time Super Bowl champion made at a commencement speech at Benedictine College went viral. The 28-year-old is under fire online after discussing a range of topics. He encouraged women to embrace their vocation as homemakers and also touched on abortion, LGBTQ rights, and the pandemic. Now, the NFL is distancing itself from the player. In a statement to People magazine, the NFL's senior vice president and chief diversity and inclusion officer says Harrison Butker gave a speech in his personal capacity. His views are not those of the NFL as an organization.
So what a bunch of cowards, the NFL. They could have just kept their mouth shut. The NFL and the political left are upset about speaking to young women about getting married and starting a family and being a mother at home with their children. Why is that a scary thought? The NFL quickly distanced themselves from Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker by saying that they don't want to support his statements or agree with them. Well, of course, they have a diversity officer. They have to give him something to do. And so, of course, he had to criticize an NFL player. Who cares what the NFL thinks? Why couldn't they just keep their mouths shut? I would suggest they felt pressured to respond. What would you expect from a Catholic who spoke at a Catholic commencement? Butker knew his audience. He wrote out his speech. It was well received by those in attendance. So this is just another example of how totally out of touch the political left is. These sort of conversations happen all the time at private Catholic and Christian universities all across America. It's normative, but this was a Kansas City Chiefs kicker, and they knew they could get headlines if they criticized him, and that's what this was. It was a strategic hit piece. It was designed in order to make anyone who didn't agree with the left-wing anti-Judeo-Christian narrative to hesitate, lest they be criticized also. So if you don't agree with the left-wingers who don't want mothers to be at home with their children, there's something wrong with you. See, that's the message that they want to roll out to the American public. And Harrison Butker just happens to be available, sort of a lightning rod, in order to propel this attack on the Judeo-Christian values of the United States of America. This tactic has been used repeatedly for decades, and it has signaled the end of many public figures, such as Anita Bryant and Dr. Laura Schlesinger. It's a Saul Alinsky rules for radicals tactic. Pick the target. In this case, it was Harrison Butker. Pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Terrify the public that you don't want to speak up because what happened to Harrison Butker could happen to you. Well, this article continues, and we're going to have a few last comments here. E! News, May 19, 2024. Tavia Hunt, who's the wife of billionaire businessman, more than 30 years, who owns the Kansas City Chiefs, she comments, "I've always encouraged my daughters to be highly educated and chase their dreams." But then she further adds, "I want them to know that they can do whatever they want that honors God. But I also want them to know that I believe finding a spouse who loves and honors you as or before himself and raising a family together is one of the greatest blessings this world has to offer." So we want to honor right now Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker for honoring his wife, for honoring his family, and for not being afraid to speak his mind. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being a part of our program today. You, our listeners, are the reason why we produce this content. America shall remain the land of the free and the home of the brave, a place where we can still proclaim liberty throughout the land. And that's a comforting thought. Until next time for Narrative Wars, I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons.
We the people are sick and tired. Hey! So tired. Hey!